So happy Easter, everyone. And welcome to our, according to some, very biblically accurate celebration of the first Easter. A woman standing in front of her faith community about to talk some nonsense. Oh, goodness. The Easter story, as told here by Luke, and arguably in Mark 2, depending on where you recognize the Gospel of Mark actually ending, Mark's telling is somewhat similar. This particular version of the Easter story is actually a story about what didn't happen and what wasn't there. The stone was rolled away from the tomb, so something was away from where it usually is. They didn't find the body. They didn't know what to make of it. They were frightened. They were told, "He isn't here." When the women went and told the apostles this, they didn't believe them. When Peter came anyway and looked inside the tomb, he didn't see Jesus' body, alive or dead. Or even the fabulously dressed men, he saw only the linen cloth. He left wondering, what in the world happened here? So I've always thought that a bagel breakfast was kind of an interesting Easter meal. But you know, maybe a bagel breakfast is the perfect pairing for this story. It's all about looking through an opening into something and seeing nothing sometimes. So the women at the tomb were the first to be presented with an explanation for this emptiness. These women saw two dazzlingly dressed strangers standing by the open tomb, and they did believe them. In my mind's eye, because this translation doesn't say angels, it says two dazzlingly dressed men. So I'm kind of picturing Billy Porter and Elton John, and I gotta say, that's a pretty cool, you know, way to hear the Easter message. But what they told the women was quite interesting, and it wasn't even really an explanation. They just said, if you're looking for Jesus, remember he told you what would happen, that he would die, that he'd rise again. So he's not here, just like he said. The women remembered then that Jesus had told them this. And so while it is nonsense to talk of death and rising again, they remembered that it was Jesus' nonsense, the good kind, I guess. So they didn't dismiss the word of these strangers because it sounded like nonsense. They went to tell the other 11 apostles. As a side note, I will say it is kind of interesting to note that Elton and Billy thought the women were there to look for the living, which is kind of interesting. Does that mean that they had already remembered and were expecting to find Jesus living? The dialogue doesn't really pick this up at all, but I thought it was interesting that their question almost begs the question, maybe the women were wondering and expecting that. But when they came back to the 11 apostles to tell their tale, the apostles were not so impressed. Was it because of the nonsensical nature of the news? Well, it could have just been because women weren't actually considered legally binding witnesses in that time. We don't know, but it doesn't say that story that they told triggered the apostles to remember that they had heard Jesus saying those words too. Now, Simon Peter has kind of been our friend through Lent this year, the wandering heart we've been following through these stories. And it doesn't say whether he believed them or not, but he did hear what they had to say and went to check it out for himself. So Simon Peter goes back to the tomb, but he doesn't get to see our dazzling strangers. He doesn't get greeted by Billy and Elton. But he did look in and saw that the tomb was empty, and that only the cloth that would have wrapped the body was left behind. So he went home wondering what had happened, from a wandering heart in Lent to a wondering heart on Easter. So I couldn't help but wonder, maybe this Easter, one of our invitations, is an extension of that question that has arisen several times for us during Lent this year. When Jesus asked the disciples, Who do they say that I am? and then followed that up with, now who do you say that I am? And so maybe one of our invitations this Easter is to take a similar tack. Not only to think about what do they say this empty tomb means, but ourselves, what do we think this empty tomb means? Because that's what the Easter story is. There are later stories of encounters with Jesus, but that morning in this gospel, the big reveal was at first nothing. The reveal was not a living, breathing Jesus. It was that Jesus' body wasn't there at all. The big reveal was an absence, that the place where death was put to rest was found to be empty. The writers of prayers and liturgy at a wonderful site called infleshed.com have a series of prompts that they call six-word story prompts. And I learned about these this Good Friday, actually, in the virtual gathering that BMC held for Queer and Trans Lament later in Good Friday evening. Basically, it's just a way of saying, to invite people to think about something, to give you a constraint, try to put your thoughts about something in six words, which is a really interesting prompt. So in the spirit of looking first to what they said, I found some very short accidental Easter sermons in some American pop music. So I invite you to hear these and see what you think. Now, some of these were sort of arguably two almost six-line phrases, so it doesn't quite meet the six-word standard, but Chumbawamba has a pretty iconic, I'd have to say, accidental Easter sermon in Tub Thumping. I get knocked down, but I get up again. You're never gonna keep me down. That's pretty good. Then there's R.E.M., and this would be interesting thinking of Jesus saying this. It's the end of the world as we know it, and I feel fine. Taylor Swift actually kept to the word limit in her song, Marjorie. What died didn't stay dead. It's a pretty cool Easter sermon. So my attempts at six-word Easter sermons looking at the empty tomb, like, yeah, they're not going to be winning any, like, platinum awards here. But here was some of my go at it. What's not here could be anywhere. This didn't end how I thought. I hope this means he's okay. Maybe what he said did happen. Sometimes that which goes away comes back. I want to hope he's alive. Again, I'm not good at six-word limits, as you all know who have sat through many of my sermons. But I do feel a kinship to this empty tomb and the invitation to think about it. I like that the story stays in this unexpected, kind of unresolved place. That there's neither the mourning over a slain hero, nor a sort of jack-in-the-box surprise Jesus springing out of the tomb, leaving you wondering if death ever happened at all. When God dies, the rules of the game are broken, and you can't possibly know how to expect what's next. You get the sense that the game doesn't know what to do with this either. And somehow, anything might be possible now. If Jesus is already a transhuman manifestation of God, or perhaps non-binary, fluid, or just queer on the divine human spectrum, then somehow it's not that crazy that he might also refuse to be limited to the binary of life and death, too, but somehow surf the horizon where they meet, disappearing under the surface and then emerging again from time to time. I think what draws me to wonder about the empty tomb is that it feels reflective of the actual pace of life and understanding when it comes to death. This Easter in particular, in a time of two recent death in our community, I feel grateful for the pace of this Easter story. I'm laughing as if this is a funny story. It's kind of funny in one of those, like, oh my word kind of ways, not in a, you'll see what I'm trying to say. But I once went to the hospital to visit someone, And when I asked for their room number, I was told that that person had passed away. I was speechless. This person was not that ill. In fact, I didn't even know why they were in the hospital yet. But after a stunned minute, the employee said, "Oh, actually, they passed away a few years ago. They had found someone by the same name who was not my friend and told me the incorrect news to my shock. They should have noticed that date right away. I don't think employees are supposed to give information out that way, even if it had been true. And I could see by the look of some of the employees around that that had been taken note of. but I will tell you that there's a part of my brain that cannot forget that false death notification. Obviously, I was overjoyed that it wasn't true, that they had not died. Like, they hadn't, it wasn't like a CPR miracle. Like, that person had never been that ill. They had never died. But that false information is kind of like this little sticky note that I can't remove from their file. Whenever I see that person or think about them, it's almost like there's this word dead crossed out on it. And so I'm happy, but it won't go away because of that notification. Being not dead anymore is not the same as just being alive. It's not the same. Jesus' disciples are changed, have been changed, are changed by Jesus' death. Even if and when Jesus comes back alive and well, he will always occupy a different place in their hearts and their minds. The Easter story doesn't erase death. Jesus is changed by it. The disciples are changed by it. We are changed by death even when new life comes from it. Even when the news turns out to be different than we thought, in the best possible way. Easter is only a reality on the other side of death. And if you've lost someone truly close to you to death, you know that you have now entered a club that you dreaded to become a member of. We all avoid membership in that club as long as we can. But once you're there, you also look around you and you see with wonder how many people were already there. People you knew before, but you meet them differently now that you are both in that club of someone who intimately knows death. And while no one wants to become a member of that club, the reality is that once you've experienced a death, your eyes become open to the sacred around you, which is to say the depth of meaning and beauty around you in ways you never were before. And when new, even beautiful things happen, there on the other side of the hardest thing you could imagine, it is kind of a miracle. But new life doesn't just tumble out of a tomb. Even when it does, if you've just suffered a devastating loss, that kind of declaration of new life will sound like nonsense. And I like that in the Gospels, there's some time here at the tomb, at least in this story. Like the women, that's what we have come prepared for. We have our spices to care for our dearly departed. We're not equipped for a 180 turn, for the employee to say, "Oops," even if that's exactly what we hoped and dreamed for. We need some time to adjust our eyes to one reality at a time. I wonder what the stories in this room are, whether it's six words or 600. What have you seen of life after death? What do you know of hope in these situations and beauty afterward? And now this year, I want to include a sort of a public service announcement that I include every Easter. So if you've heard it before, you can roll your eyes. But I think it's worth saying every Easter. If you cannot wrap your brain around the science of this story, if you are stubbornly, angrily thinking, "Why should I even want this story to be true? God gets to have his son come back to life when other beloved sons don't." I invite you to not get lost in the conundrum, but to remember and rest in what Jesus said. "If I'm ever not around, if you ever can't see me, if you ever don't get it, look to each other. Eat together, drink together. I'll be with you there. And look to the overlooked among and around you. That is where you'll find me. Visit them, feed them, clothe them, love them. That's what it's all about. And by the reverse, I think we can also say that when you don't see God or Jesus present around you, but someone does these things for you, or shares their life or food or drink with you, that is Christ with you. That is enough Easter, no matter what you can or can't wrap your brain around about this story. Maybe my favorite accidental Easter pop music sermon comes from Cyndi Lauper. If you're lost, you can look. It's 2 6-word lines. If you're lost, you can look, and you will find me time after time. Easter is a wonder and a sign, and many signs and wonders were attributed to Jesus throughout his life. But they were always, I believe, to point folks toward living with one another in ways that allow for mutual flourishing. The point was never the signs and wonders themselves. The end game wasn't to believe miracles, but to get our attention to point us to truly loving one another, to believe that love can do miraculous things. So keep doing it anyway, no matter what. And so I invite us all, and perhaps particularly those who might be secretly or not so secretly agreeing that the whole Easter story might be nonsense, to hear these words of a wondering heart, again by Jade Kaiser, writing on enflesh.com. May this be our prayer this Easter. Wherever God shows up today, may I not be too hurried to notice, nor too aloof to care. When the sacred surprises me like an unexpected guest, may I not hesitate to greet them with open arms. Let not my bias be a barrier to embracing the Holy's mysterious ways. May I be hospitable to God infleshed in even the dullest circumstances and the hardest situations and the strangest places. I am open to encountering love, to meeting with justice, to being held by awe. May it be so. Amen.